Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. It is indeed time for Movies and Booze. We are joined in the studio by Brian Lloyd, Linda Coogan, and taking time out from being in charge of just about everything, Annette Freeman is here with us. Good afternoon to you all.
Good afternoon.
It's not just wine we're doing today, Linda. It's some other sort of thing.
A little cream liqueur that I thought was a bit special, so I thought we'd have a little taste of that.
Okay. Is when people say Bailey's is a cream liqueur, isn't Bailey's, but this is the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Bailey's on steroids, I suppose, because there's a lot more complexity to it and it's richer and more luscious and delicious.
Yeah. Okay. And what's the wine we're doing today?
One of my personal favourites, La Rioja Alta Vina Arganza Reserva.
Okay.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah.
I'll definitely spell it out.
We'll have all the, oh my God. Why didn't that? We'll have complaints. Why wasn't that woman a fluent speaker before she tried to pronounce that word?
They're both beautiful. A classic traditional red and then something a little bit different from Five Farms.
Great. And Inside Out too. Big excitement in our house. Waiting for that to come. Absolutely.
It's good. There's new emotions. There's anxiety. That's voiced by Maya Hawke. There's envy voiced by Aya Edebiri. There's my personal favourite, which is Ennui, which is voiced by French indie actor Adele Axaropoulos, which is just, she goes around like literally just like, I am how you call the boredom.
Yes.
Perfect. And then there's Embarrassment as well, who says nothing for the majority of the movie and just like cuddles over in a corner. So, very funny.
It was, like, if there was ever a movie that was an autumn, you know, there was a natural progression
100%.
To make a number two.
Definitely.
That was it. And the other one is about a Sasquatch.
Right. It's called Sasquatch Sunset.
Yes.
It is a family adventure comedy with no dialogue, and it's all about a family of Sasquatches in the American wilderness. And I can just see you looking at me like I've got 10 heads, and it's actually not that bad.
Okay. Is it animated?
No. It's live action.
It's live action.
Yeah. So. And Jesse Eisenberg and Riley Keough, who is Elvis's granddaughter, are the two leads in this.
And they're
full makeup and look completely unrecognisable. And again, have no dialogue whatsoever other than a lot of grunts.
Are they in Sasquatch outfits?
Yes.
Or so you think they're animals? You don't think they're people?
That's the idea.
It's not like cats?
No. They are like, it's like cats in the sense of like they're in full makeup and full kind of costume and they're going around grunting and eating plants and doing other stuff.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I can sell it to you.
I'm going to keep an open mind for at least the next 5 seconds. Moana 2, but it's live action, Nettie. What the hell?
Yeah, so there's obviously we got news this week about a sequel to Moana, so Moana 2. But in the past 24 hours, we've got confirmation that Disney have found the actress for the live action movie for Moana, which will be going into production this summer. We have a bit of wait. It's going to be coming out in 2026. But there's a 17-year-old actress called Catherine Lilagia who'll be going to be playing the title role. So she's from Sydney. She's daughter of New Zealand actor Jay Lilagia. The Rock is going to obviously be playing Maui and he's going to be producing the film as well, along with some other people. The original girl that voiced Moana, Auli Cavallo, she was not chosen for the lead role. And there was that other actress called Zinedia. She was Zendaya. I mangled that one.
Yeah.
I was doing so well with the other two. And
no, you made a mess of that.
I did.
Well,
yeah, but it can.
Just
X that one out. So I think it was probably an age thing, the reason why this 17-year-old Sydney actress was, because the girl who actually voiced Moana is now 23.
And maybe doesn't look that young.
Exactly. But this girl...
Fags and booze will do it,
And all
Moana
the
goes on the tear around Sydney. Yeah.
Catherine obviously looks like the perfect Moana, though. She is half Samoan, as are many of the actors and actresses that are going to be in this film. So the casting is just completely on point. It's just the weight, really. But I'm not sure about live action remakes of stuff. I like Moana, and it was a huge hit in our house. I think we watched it every single day during the first lockdown, and myself and my husband would still like to watch it, but nobody in the house wants to watch it. Do you ever get like that about kids' movies? You're like, I wish they'd watch
that one, because that's because I kind of like that one.
I really liked that one. You know, she was a different spin on a Disney princess, wasn't she?
Yeah.
She just had something, a little bit of spark to her. But in terms of it being a live action remake, I can't name one that I like. Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Cinderella, Cruella. I didn't like any of those. I just like the animation.
You may have a point there.
No, they're generally are pretty flat. I think that's it, because, you know, you look at something like The Lion King, which was kind of, I would say, the perfect mix of like animated CGI and the kind of a live action thing. But even at that, it was pretty soulless. Like, you know, the turnaway. It does lose, I think, a lot of the magic transition into real life. And also as well, whenever you make a remake or you make a live action from an animated, you're always going to compare it to the original. And 9 times out of 10, it will always come up short. Like, so.
Yeah, it's true. So Moana 2 is a live action, or there's going to be a Moana 2 and a live action?
Yes.
Exactly. There's two. So, but Moana 2, the animation is out sometime this year. I think in November or something.
Okay,
I might be wrong.
Okay.
I don't know. And then the live action is out in 2026. So it's a little bit of a wait for fans of Moana that are little now and love Moana.
They'll age out of it by the time it gets, I'd nearly say.
Yeah, they would. Well, their parents will go and see it anyway. Well, or they'll drag their 14-year-olds.
And then they'll hate it. Yeah.
Oh, and I assume The Rock is in the Moana 2 as well.
Yes, he is.
All the original cast
are in Moana 2, but just that lead role, the girl who voiced Moana...
Yeah.
She only Cavallo. She is not in the live action remake.
You see, The Rock is a producer of this live action one, isn't he? So I blame him.
Yeah, he's
really. He's just going to ruin it because he's getting notions.
Don't blame
now.
The Rock.
I'm blaming Sean, The Rock. No. The Rock's getting notions.
The Rock. No, he's cool as. Love The Rock.
He's getting a lot of grief at the minute. Like, there's all this kind of like, there's like on set rumors like that basically. He was turning up late to set, that he was causing like production delays by being like really like late to set and having issues with people. And apparently like Vin Diesel and him just did not get on at all during the Fast and Furious films. Like,
well, if I'm picking someone there, I'm picking The Rock.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. Not Vin Diesel.
I mean, Vin Diesel always does seem like a bit of a.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's true. It's indisputable. I wonder why The Rock was being late, though.
Just because he's The Rock, like, you know, he's got to go home and like pump those irons and then do 10 Instagram stories. And then he's got to, you know, go produce another film, and then he's got to go do his TV show. And, you know, he's just everywhere. Like,
yeah, it's his own fault.
Yeah.
Right. So the Blair Witch Project, the cast now are they're moaning about something. They won't get given enough money or something.
This has gone on a little while, but it has picked up speed in recent weeks. But the original cast of the Blair Witch Project have called out film studio Lionsgate for compensation and meaningful consultation from now on. But it was one of the most successful independent horror movies ever made. But the cast, they've been speaking out against Lionsgate for not fairly compensating them back at the time when the movie was made. And they've released letters that, you know, obviously off the back of that, Lionsgate are going to be announcing plans to revive the movie, but they want royalties and compensation out of it. I think what happened here is that they were quite young and they signed stuff that probably now in retrospect wasn't in their best interest. And they've been speaking out for years about lack of recognition and demanding compensation for any future Blair Witch projects. So it's yet to be seen, you know, whether Lionsgate will enter conversations with them. I think all three back in 1999 received performance bumps and a fruit basket.
There you go. Yeah.
But they sued in the 2000s and they did receive money back then, $300,000 each. But I think that they're all their lives are kind of really hard now. They've hit on hard times in terms of, you know, financially, and
what happened to them?
Well, some of them like are saying, well, I'm driving a car that, you know, isn't really working very well, and my wife can't pay for groceries, this sort of type of stuff.
Why would they not go out and get a job?
No, it's easier to just knock.
I don't want to be unsympathetic. No, but like, you know, that's the obvious solution here.
When they made the Blair Witch Project movie, they were like, that's like 10 minutes footage. They didn't realise it was going to do as well as it did.
Oh, no, and but probably nobody did, in
fairness. The female actress, her voice or her scream has been used in other productions in recent years.
It's become a library sound.
Yes, exactly. Brian will help me out here.
Yeah, okay. No, that was the whole thing of it was that they basically signed just the worst possible contracts they ever could have signed, and they practically signed away their entire lives for this film. Mm. And, you know, at the time, I mean, I even remember when this was first released, there was a whole thing about, like, the woman actor, I forget her name now, but she was, like, still bussing.
That's your biz.
That's kind of, yeah, unfortunately.
But, like, I mean, Donahue, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. But she was, like, still bussing tables and all the rest of it. And, like, another one apparently was, like, driving this banger past a billboard and his face was on the side of it. And, you know, like, they are a classic example of how Hollywood will take very naive, creative people and just chew them up and spit them out the other side.
Screamers.
But you know what I mean?
Well, like, it was creative screaming.
But I mean, you have to remember, like, at the time Blair Witch came out, there was no internet, there was no anything. People thought it was real. People actually thought this was a snuff film.
Yeah.
And it made huge business. I mean, I remember trailers for this. If you remember, there was an old RTE show called The Last Picture Show. And they screened this, like, I think it was like 3 years after it was out in cinemas, and they were talking about the whole thing of, like, people actually went to see this, thought it was real, and were having, like, panic attack in cinemas. And it made huge money. I think it was like 135 million off of like 100,000 budget and stuff like that. So, like, it made everyone else money except for the people who actually made the film. That's the problem with it. And that would just stick in anyone's craw.
And did any of the actors, I mean, now have anything of a career out
that's
of this?
The thing. Not really. Oh, and, like, because Lionsgate owned the rights to everything, they couldn't even go off and do their own kind of spin-offs or anything. Lionsgate just literally took it, handed it off to different directors on the cheap. And all the sequels were all terrible. Like, I mean, none of them were any good. Like, and even with something like Paranormal Activity, I mean, that was the kind of the next sort of found footage horror film to do really well. And the people who did that learned their lesson from Blair Witch. They were like, no, we own this. This is our product. You can use it, but you're going to pay us every single penny of it.
Right.
So,
okay.
They're a cautionary tale, I would say.
Yeah. The only kids' movie we still watch in our house is Up.
I've never watched it.
Oh, that's lovely.
Really?
That's a lovely movie.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah, Up is good. Yeah.
The first 10 minutes of it, though, will kill you. Yeah. The first 10 minutes will wipe you out.
I know the image. It's the house and the balloon. But I don't know why we never watched that, but we didn't. Yeah. It's sad.
Do you cry a lot in movies, Brian? I get the impression you do.
I
or you're
been.
Holding it in. You're at these kind of, all with all these jaded, cynical
mirrors.
No, I mean,
this year I've cried at one film. Like,
yeah.
And that was The Iron Claw. And that just wiped me out. Like,
In the cinema.
In the cinema. The screen.
In front of other screen people.
Yeah.
Like others.
Private viewing.
Yeah, that's
okay. Masculinity.
Yeah.
Like, what? Well,
no, it's true. Yeah, I know. It's Ireland. It's just so weird for us, you know. But it's very healthy and fantastic, and I applaud you.
Just for a film
critic
to do that.
Why?
I don't know why.
Stop, you'll make him cry.
Sorry.
I'm saying, like, because you know what? Do you think I'm too cynical? Is that it?
Well, no, I just thought that people wouldn't be blubbering in movies.
That's refreshing
to hear.
He's the only one in there in touch with their feelings. The rest of them have been battered to death by life.
Hold on a second, right? First of all, I'm dead on the inside, so don't get twisted.
No, clearly not.
But in the sense of, like, if I connect with something in a very meaningful way, yeah, fine. You might choke up a little bit. Like, an Iron Claw, I mean, the scenes in question, like, not to spoil or anything, but it was about suicide and it was about losing your brothers and stuff like that. And that really, really affected me. Like, so, you know, I would say it doesn't happen all the time. I'm not, like, sitting in the back crying at Inside Out 2 or whatever.
No, but I remember when you were reviewing that, you said you rang your brother afterwards.
I rang my brother afterwards. It really, the Iron Claw, really, because it was all about, like, you know, like, your brother's dying young and all the rest of it. And like, it really, really affected me. Like, and I would encourage anyone who's seen The Iron Claw, they'll know what I'm talking about. Like, it's really, really affecting.
Yeah. Moana is excellent because the girl doesn't need a knight in shining armour and all the other crap that happens in Beauty and Beast movies. I love this movie and I'm a granny, so I've watched it loads with my granddaughter, but she's outgrown it now. She's 13, but I haven't, says Maureen. And someone says, this is going back to The Rock, in the league table of greatest baldies of all time, The Rock sits on top. Then you have Vin Diesel, followed by Connor Pope, followed by Jason Statham. Connor Pope? No, he's in there.
Wait a second. Where the hell is Telly Savalas, Kojak? Where the hell is Kojak in
good
that?
Good point.
Yeah,
yes,
come on.
Good point. Anyway, let's have a... what are we going to drink first, Linda?
We're having the red first.
Okay, fabulous.
These both have something in common, which is a creamy, velvety, silky texture. So the red, La Rioja Alta Vina Arganza. Reserva, 2017. And this has been rated 94 points by Robert Parker, 94 points by Tim Atkin, Master of Wine, and 95 points by James Suckling. So these are genuine, reliable, absolute experts in wine. So it's amazing rating. You're liking that?
Yeah, I like that too. Yeah, that's fabulous. Yeah, that's
so
lovely.
Basically, I was looking at this being like an absolute classic. Basically, the winery was founded in 1890 in the heart of Harrow region in Rioja. And, you know, they just make their own vineyards, 360 hectares of it, which is a lot for them to own themselves. So they look after the grapes from start to finish. Mm. So from farm to fork. And they bottle it. This particular wine is a blend of Tempranillo and Garnacha. And it spends up to 3 years in oak barrels, which 20% are new oak, just to give the vanilla and coconut notes to it. Yeah. And then just to soften out, that is what makes it so silky. Now, I did remind Brian that it is Father's Day this weekend.
Thank you. Yes.
Yes.
Appreciate
so
that.
This, as far as I'm concerned, is an absolute cracker of a wine to give as a gift to your beloved dad. It is a little bit pricier. It's €40. But for me, a Reserva of this quality is absolutely amazing. They do have an entry level one, an entry at £25, which is Vina Alberdi. And they are all really, really popular in loads of independents throughout the country. Naming a few, Judavan in Portmarnock, Devonies in Dundrum, Grapevine in Dalkey, 64 Wines, Celtic Whiskey Shop, Martin's, McHugh's, everywhere, like in Cork and everything as well. So,
yeah.
Vina Ardanza.
How old is it now? How long has that been?
It's 2017.
Oh,
is
wow.
The vintage.
Okay. So
it's
oh
had
gosh.
At least
yeah.
3 years in oak barrel and then bottle age as well. Yeah. So this is gorgeous now. I got the shop to open it up for me a couple of hours ago. So beef, lamb, anything like that. Now I could just personally drink that on its own. But it's amazing if it, look yes. at you, you're smiling.
It's like, such a treat to drink when you said something like yeah. that, like that it's 2017 is such a treat to drink something like that. Thanks.
Yeah,
so glad I can.
Yeah, yeah, some people get fussy and like to have food with it. Yeah.
I was just there going, when's somebody going to wheel in the...
The
roster?
Cheese.
Yeah, yeah,
the
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
We have, yeah. Yeah, we have the silver service yeah. to start during the ad break. So after that ad break, what film would you like to find?
Inside Out 2.
Inside Out 2 coming up after this.
Behold, my super high-tech Riley protection system. Don't look, it's fine. This is for all those memories that belong in the back of the mind. Like this penalty one. It's weighing on her, so let's lighten the load. A one-way expressway to... We're not gonna think about that right now. Woo!
Wow,
that's pretty impressive.
You take such good care of Riley.
Thanks, I try. Okay, let's do a sweep. Oh, here's one where she waved at a guy who was actually waving at a girl behind her.
Oh, that was so bad. Good choice.
Oh, here's when she forgot that girl's name.
Oh, yeah, that was super awkward.
What was her name?
I don't know, Janet or something. Whatever, let's just get rid of it. Oh. We keep the best and toss the rest. Whew.
That is Inside Out 2. Is that in cinemas now, Brian? Or
that is in cinemas from tomorrow.
From tomorrow, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. What's been the gap between... this and the original film?
I want to say about 8-9 years, maybe more.
Is it that long?
It is that long. Yeah, it is definitely that long. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's essentially, it hasn't been that long in the terms of the film.
Yeah.
The person in question, Riley, is now 13. Mm. She's about to enter puberty. You know, this is, you would think this is a topic like you're thinking, how can they kind of do this in a kind of a child appropriate way? Turns out they actually, Disney Pixar actually did it before. There was a film 2 years ago, if you ever saw it, called Turning Red.
Yeah, fantastic movie.
I thought it was so good.
Yeah.
So
good.
Clever.
Because it got everything about, like, you know, the awkwardness of puberty, menstruation, mother-daughter relationships, all of it, fantastic. Inside Out 2 is kind of covering the same ground. Like I said, Riley is now 13. She's going into puberty. The whole film is set over 3 days at this hockey camp where she's basically been told that her two friends from school are going off to a different high school. And she now has to basically try ingratiate herself into the older kids in her high school and join this hockey team. That's when Anxiety, who's voiced by Maya Hawke, turns up with a whole other different range of emotions. Envy, like I said, voiced by Iowa Edebiri, she was in The Bear. Ennui, voiced by Adele Exarchopoulos, who was in like Blue is the Warmest Colour. She's a very famous French actress, kind of like Francois Hardy. And then you have Embarrassment, that's that's voiced by Paul Walter Hauser, who has literally one line. And then Nostalgia, which is my personal favourite, who is this old woman as voiced by June Squibb and has like three lines. And she just like comes out and goes, "Oh, I remember when we just got to this hockey camp." And goes, "Yeah, that was 5 minutes ago. Like, wait until, you know, we were at a wedding or something like that before you come out." And that's really what happens. And anxiety basically takes over Riley's mind. Dumps joy, sadness, disgust and anger to the back of Riley's mind, and they have to follow the stream of consciousness, literally, to get back to the front of her mind. And while all this is happening, anxiety takes over the mind. There's one scene that I thought was very, very funny, where basically anxiety has commandeered Riley's imagination, and it turns it into an animation studio where she's projecting all of these different things that could possibly happen. And it's kind of like a joke about
meta kind of joke.
Meta kind of joke about how kind of, you know, grinding animation can be. I like this. It's not as good as the first one, though. And okay. I think part of the reason is that, for one, it's, you know, what made Inside Out so great was the fact that you couldn't really imagine something like this. You know, that sort of way. It was so unique. It was so different. And I think the simplicity of it as well, the fact that it was just joy, sadness, anger, meant that narratively it was a lot cleaner. This time around, though, by bringing in anxiety and bringing in the kind of the awkwardness of the teenage years, in Turning Red, they really leaned into the weirdness. They really leaned into the awkwardness. Like, you know, the girl in Turning Red had this massive, massive crush. And like, you know, the real sort of like, of it was really, they leaned into it. In this, however, it's a lot more kind of circumspect. They're kind of trying to sand off the weird edges. They're trying to kind of make it a bit more, I guess, broadly appealing, which is fine. Yeah. It is fine. Yeah. But it doesn't kind of capture all of the kind of range of emotions, for lack of a better word, that Turning Red got and did really, really well. That being said, it's very, very funny.
Yeah, okay. But the story sounds similar, because in the first one, Joy kind of had to make a journey
exactly.
back to...
Yeah. That's what I mean, yeah. Like, it is covering the same thing again and again. And, you know, there is more of a, I suppose, an antagonist in this, in Maya Hawke. And again, she's brilliant in this. Like, she is just a complete motor mouth. Just da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it's interesting as well, because, I mean, her father obviously is Ethan Hawke and her mother is Uma Thurman. Like, and both of them are known for being very kind of staid and very kind of, you know, beautifully and austere and all the rest of it. You wouldn't think that Maya Hawke is this like motor mouth, anxiety ridden, able to play it so, so well. But she does it. And again, the other part of it as well is that it's not necessarily that anxiety is a villain. She's an antagonist. And her whole thing is that she's trying to protect Riley in the same way that Joy is trying to protect Riley, who's voiced by Amy Poehler. They're very, very similar. It's just anxiety, I suppose, loses the run of itself and projects ahead, whereas Joy just imagines everything ahead of her is going to be perfect.
Yeah. Is Inside Out like the Numbskulls cartoon strip?
From The Dandy. Yes. Yeah. I used to read The Dandy. Yeah. I remember The Numbskulls. Yes. Yeah. Yes, it is. It That's is. Exactly
Basically,
what it's like.
The Numbskulls could have sued after the first movie. A couple of wine questions. Mm-hmm. The wine app Vivino, is it a reliable assessor for wine? Someone wants to know.
Controversial.
Goody, controversial answer coming up here.
So, to be honest with you, I think it's a useful tool. Millions of users globally. Now, I'm going to get backlash for this, and that's fine. But I personally think that it is basically used by millions of users who don't have any professional knowledge of wine. They're just wine drinkers. So you might like this, and you say, 5 out of 5, I love it. And because, you know, it's 40 quid, you might go, it's okay, it's like 3.5. Where are you getting your scores from? So you mightn't like this style. You might prefer a lighter style, like a Beaujolais or a Pinot Noir. So people are just rating based on 1 to 5. And you can go 4.1, 4.2. But what gives it that? I don't know. Whereas I was telling you, the people, Robert Parker, Tim Atkin, Master of Wine, have given these out of 100, 94, 95 points. So this is genuinely like blind tasted and all that, but it's a really useful tool because people can scan the code at the bottle label and it comes up and they say, and it says on the app, similar wines like this.
It's like Letterboxd for wine.
What's Letterboxd? I don't know what
Letterboxd
is.
It's like Goodreads for wine.
Or Goodreads, Goodreads for wine, yeah.
So, I mean, like it's handy and useful, but, and also the price is global. So quite often, at the Irish price is completely wrong, do you know? Because it's not taken into account our duty and taxes, which are pretty high. So if you're at, like, loads of people go into wine shops and we literally use Vivino instead of speaking to people. So I find that a bit sad, because if I'm in a wine shop there to help, I will ask you questions, find out what do you like, tell me something about your style, instead of them just using an app. So it kind of saddens me.
And,
a little bit.
And wine taste is so subjective. It's more subjective probably even than books or films. Or
if you go on to the app, like 10 people might say it's sweet, 10 people might say it's dry, and it's all over the place. So I actually, in my podcast, Wine, the Long and Short of It, we just released an episode yesterday that was wine influencers. Mm-hmm. Last week. And it's talking about who are the influencers of wine. You know, is it us with our podcast? Is it Robert Parker, who's like nearly 70 now? Or is it social media or Vivino? And we kind of have a rant about all of that.
Are there wine influencers?
Yeah, why aren't they called wine influencers?
I try to say that word in the podcast, to be honest.
But
a lot of them are actual lifestyle influencers who then pick up a pretty bottle and put it on their gorgeous. And that's another little...
I like it.
So that's a little bit of a rant that I have. Vivino is a useful tool for storing photographs of wines that you enjoy. But I wouldn't necessarily use it to.
Where can you get Shamborson wine in Ireland? I drank it once in Australia and it was incredible. I only bought one bottle of it home. And while I offered my friends a sip, I couldn't bring myself to offer them a glass. It was that delicious. Wow. Shamborson?
Don't know. Let me look it up.
Wine Searcher might tell them if it's available.
Let me try and find out.
Someone else says, I'd love to go to an emotionally manipulative movie with Brian in a darkened cinema. I could be his hanky holder. I don't know if that's a phrase for something. Presumably it's just to hold a hanky. Richard the Thatcher says, I'm sorry, I'm only half hearing the radio in the rain. Did someone say that Connor Pope had a creamy, silky, velvety texture? Yes, he does.
Jesus Christ. We were indeed.
Just saying that. He's smooth. So good news, bad news. Paddington 3 is going to be back, but Sally Hawkins isn't going to be in it. I love Sally Hawkins.
She's great.
Yeah, she's bowed out of as Mrs. Brown. We learned that like last year, but she hasn't told fans why she's stepped away from the movie. She doesn't really do that many interviews, so that's possibly why she's not told fans. But Emily Mortimer is going to be taking over the role of Mrs. Brown. Obviously, there was a new trailer released for Paddington 3 this year. We've been waiting a little bit of a while for this. It's the third installment, obviously. And there are some great castings, though. Olivia Colman's going to be playing a nun, and Antonio Banderas is going to be playing a sailor.
And of course he is.
He'd be a good sailor, actually.
It was also announced that Paul King, who directed the other two films, wouldn't be directing this third installment. Doug Wilson will be taking over. 7 years of a wait. I did say it was a long wait, but it's 7 years. It's going to obviously pack cinemas up and down the country. It's going to be out later this year in November. We're huge fans of Paddington. Like, tell me who isn't, though.
It's fabulous. How can you have a problem with it? Like, come on. Like, Brendan Gleeson is brilliant in it.
Knuckles. Was he in the first or the second?
He was in the second.
The second was better.
It was. Oh, yeah. But Hugh Grant
in the second was amazing. Amazing.
Terrific.
Personally, I cannot wait for this. I've been waiting outside the cinema door. It's going to be brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay. And he goes to Peru in search of
his original family.
That's a huge part of it.
About time, really. Now, Ariana Grande has said the child stars should get therapy. It should be mandatory, as opposed to let's just not put kids in that position at all. It seems kind of odd to me that she'd go about it that way.
Yeah, look, I suppose she's talking from her own experience. She was with Nickelodeon. She did two different programs. I'm probably most familiar with Sam and Cat. She was on that set for 1 year with Jeanette McCurdy, who has also been really vocal about her time at Nickelodeon. And this is kind of off the in the aftermath of a 5-part series that was on TV in March, but it's been distributed on different streaming services of late. It's called Quite On Set: The Dark Side of Kids TV, and it explores and spotlights two convicted sex offenders that worked within Nickelodeon, and also Dan Schneider and his tenure, and obviously since the Me Too movement, it's like, can Hollywood get any more shocking in this kind of realm? Yeah. But clearly it can, because this content that came out on the 5-part series, some serious allegations, and obviously fueling more conversations from stars like Ariana Grande and Sam McCurdy. Like I said, they've both been really vocal. They were childhood actors. What Ariana Grande is talking about is that the environment needs to be made safer for kids that are going into acting, that they should be therapists. She said, I think parents should be allowed on whenever they want to be. And I think that it's not, I think not just on kids' sets, but if anybody wants to do this in music or any level of exposure, there needs to be some type of contract around therapy that is mandatory for kid stars. Now, I would hope that kid stars' experiences are better now than they were when Ariana Grande was on set 10 or more years ago. But really interesting stuff. Jeanette McCurdy has been really vocal.
I'm glad my mom died. Like, it was brilliant. Like, it's really.
And it was to do with her time in Nickelodeon, but also to do with her mom and that dysfunctional relationship and stuff. But like, talking about on set for 12 and 14 days or 12 and 14 hours, like days straight. Crazy stuff and for small kids.
Yeah, but the thing of it, and like, that's all very true, but like, the way that she kind of approaches it really reminded me of like Carrie Fisher, like Letters from the Edge. Like, it's in like, it's very dark, but like, she has this really twisted humor about it. I mean, literally, the name of the book is I'm Glad My Mom Died, like, and it's her like smiling on the front cover, like, and you wouldn't think those things would work. But yeah, I mean, it's. There are, I mean, this goes, you go way back into old Hollywood, like, and there are horror stories about how kids were treated.
I'm trying to think, I watched something on Disney about somebody that was a childhood actor in the 40s or 50s, and I watched it recently.
Liza Minnelli, like, or one of those ones, was it?
Yeah, it was somebody like that, but I can't, I'm just Googling it now to see, can I find out who was. It was so good. It was really, really good.
Oh, God. Linda, so tell us about our cream liqueur.
All right, I was going to tell you about this Shambucan wine as well.
Oh, yeah,
which
mainly
readily available in the United States, Australia, then in its homeland, France.
Yeah, there you go.
I've no idea where you get one here, I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay. Well, then that's if you can't get it here, you can't get it here. That's
So Five Farms, County Cork, Ireland, single batch Irish cream liqueur. So it is...
You're lucky Fionnuala's not here, by the way. If you did that Cork accent in front of her, she'd lift you out of it.
I would make her... I wasn't trying to do one.
You did a little bit of it there, I heard it.
It's kind of infectious.
No, I can't do it at all. So the marketing is, you know, vibrant green grass for the grazing cattle and things like this. But yeah, so it's Five Farms and they have rich single batch dairy. They're family owned farms and they give the dairy for this product. So unlike the other cream liqueurs that are on the market that everybody wouldn't very well know, this is setting itself, which I think is quite disruptive to the market. I mean, it's hard going against a Bailey's, like, do you know what I mean? That sells no problem. So this is looking to be premium. So if you have a little taste of it, have you tasted it?
I have, and I don't usually like these types of things, but that's really nice. It's just, it's not, like, there's no big hit off it, but it's just really easy to drink.
Very easy to drink.
And the ice, I could never think of putting ice in it. That's because I never have it. But it's really nice.
So when it doesn't have the ice, it's really kind of butterscotchy, you know, real toffee and all that. And just really, really complex because they've added more, like 10% of the blend is whiskey. So it is a 17% liqueur. Yeah. They have the cattle out for 300 days on the pasture and all this, you know. I love their website, which is Five Farms Irish Cream. .com, and they've loads and loads of recipes. Baby Guinness, mint Irish cream brownies. Don't just drink it, you can use it for cooking and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah,
as well.
All right. Okay.
Who is the time for that? Just drink it.
Yeah, just drink it.
Or over ice cream.
Do you ever have a slippery nipple?
No.
Yeah.
What is it? What's in it?
I can't remember. But I remember having a lot of them to drink one night, and it was many years ago.
It probably put you off.
And I'd like to apologise to the taxi driver who brought me home.
Hope you threw his
No, anyway, I gave him what I had, but I ruined his night in every sense, I'm afraid to say. Shall we move on to our it's a beautiful bottle as well, it should be said.
So it's a reusable bottle and they're kind of going back to the old fashioned milk bottles that used to go
that's
down
what
in
it
a
is.
Little crate.
Yeah.
I did put it on social so people can see it, but it's a beautiful presentation. Again, a great gift idea. And it's available kind of nationwide as well. Ardkeen in Waterford, Martins, Bradley's in Cork, Super Value, Tesco, and it is €35. And all the independents as well. But just again, Kinsale Mead is another brilliant Irish product. Valentia Island Vermouth. Again, gorgeous gift ideas if you're looking for something local.
Okie dokie. We'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is Sasquatch Sunset. Here's an action-packed clip.
I can't believe it.
I can't believe you played a clip from this. When we played that just there, Brian was bawling. He bawling his eyes out.
I can't believe it.
There's no actual dialogue.
None. Yeah. Not one word in this film is spoken by a human being. Okay, there is a bit in it where they find it. Well, there's a bit of music and you hear a song. But no dialogue in this film whatsoever. I will say there was a film out in 1986. You might remember it.
Quest for Fire.
Correcto mundo.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Quest for Fire with Everett McGill from Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
And there was another film called Clan of the Cave Bear with Daryl Hannah, if you remember that one.
No.
Okay. Well, essentially, there were these two films anyway, which essentially were about like prehistoric world. And they were done with no dialogue. And they were done in these kind of, you know, very experimental ways, and it was all about adventure and the idea of like forming society and what does it look like and everything else. And you know, it takes a lot of guts to make a film with no dialogue. And just even as an example, there's a film called WALL-E, if you remember, minimal dialogue in it at all, but you get everything from it. And that's what Sasquatch Sunset does as well. The best way I could describe this film, if I was to try explain it to somebody, think Harry and the Hendersons, except There are no Hendersons. You're just following Harry for the whole thing. Or the first 15 minutes of 2001 with the apes. But that's just stretched out to 90 minutes. And you would think, who the hell is going to watch that? Fair enough. It's not for everybody. I mean, this is an art house film. It's not getting a wide release. You'll probably see this in somewhere like the IFI or Palace or Triskel Arts Centre down in Cork. But it looks gorgeous. It's really unique. It is not your cookie cutter film. You can follow the story. It's not as if you don't know what's going on. Like, I mean, they are literally humping each other at one point. Like the opening scene is the two squatchos. And sorry for spilling.
That's right. That's why I remember Quest for Fire, because there's a scene in that where one shows the other how to do missionary positions. Yeah. This is a major evolutionary leap forward.
That's the thing. Yeah. Like, I mean, there is it's literally like there's a part of it where Riley Keough's Sasquatch figures out that she's pregnant by rubbing her genitalia and then smelling herself, and like she goes around.
That's like a traditional method, really. Why would you be bothered with them blue lines at all?
But that's what I'm saying to you. Like, it's the idea of like, you know, animal and nature will find its own kind of way in terms of society and civilization. It may be far removed from a blue line and all the rest of it, but it does happen. Like, and I think that's what's so interesting about Sasquatch Sunset is that you are seeing the kernel of evolution. Now, look, again, this is not for everyone. I'm not saying you're going to have a whale of a time seeing this, but I think if you were looking for something unlike anything you've seen before, or if you happen to really like Quest for Fire, then by all means go see this.
Okay,
it looks gorgeous. It looks gorgeous as well.
Yeah. Okay, and I suppose, it's but having no dialogue doesn't necessarily make it kind of an art housey film. More difficult.
I mean, I'm saying it's art house. Like, I mean, it's very accessible. Like, you know, that's where you know exactly what's going on. There's nothing sort of esoteric about it. I would say the only thing that's art house about it is the fact that there's no dialogue and they're all grunting and it's a little bit weird.
Okay, there's that. Yeah. Right. Okay. Well, on a kind of a theme, I suppose. Well, Bridgerton is longest sex scene ever.
Yeah, that's
now is this Nicola Coughlan?
I saw this the other day. Yeah. My wife showed it to me. She made a point of showing it to me. Like, yeah.
See,
yeah.
I haven't managed to get my husband into watching Bridgerton. I went to say we watch, and then he said, turn off that muck. I don't think he really understands
Okay, that's not a positive review.
But, so part two of Bridgerton has dropped over the last 24 hours. And it includes the longest sex scene thus far in the Bridgerton series. And it's 6 minutes. Did you watch it all?
I did, yeah. My wife showed me the whole 6 minutes of it. Yeah. I
mean, no, 6 minutes. How much of that consisted of, like, you know, buying her a few drinks? No, it was not.
Well, he undresses her in front of a mirror, and then, like, they're doing it on a couch, and it's all very lovely. Like, I mean, it's all very tasteful.
Yeah, like it always is in Bridgerton.
Yeah. Is this Nicola Coughlan? Because this is what the whole series has been building up to.
Yes. Poland. Is this what they're
called? Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Penelope and Colin. Yes. How do I know that shit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the third series.
Sorry.
No.
Did he just
curse? He did, yeah. Sorry.
That's
sorry.
What we get That's the complaints
sorry,
about.
Sorry, yeah, sorry, yeah. Sorry. That slipped out. Sorry.
Quick, hurry up. Come on. We want the deets.
Oh, that is the deets.
All right,
get on and watch Bridgerton.
Was it Missionary?
I'm
going to
do... Yeah. I'm trying to tell you. He's the one that watched it.
There's a lot of thrusting. I was surprised with the thrusting.
Okay, right. Yeah. Okay.
They don't normally do that. Right. Normally sex scenes are very kind of like it's just...
Yeah.
And then nothing happens, but this was...
Okay, yeah. The fans have been waiting a long time for these two.
Your TV will shake when you watch it. Thanks a million, lads. To Anand, Linda and Brian.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief
with Marks and Spencer
on News Talk.